Tonight, I want to discuss the Hachakos, Simkuf Tzarihe, which I guess is the most stringent in certain ways section of Chasnidim, that there is numerous chumras added by Chazal and by Minhagim to the strict prohibition of the Halacha, and the basic rule of Hachakos is the more particular, meticulous one is in observing them, the more you get out of it, so to speak. And in that, one who is going to be lax on Hachakos in one's own home, sure, no one's going to know, but ultimately, only ones who lose out are the people themselves, ultimately. Because the more one is careful to avoid and to be extremely makbid on every one of the Isurim of the Hachakos, the more we're then able to appreciate the renewal of the relationship after one's wife returns from mikvah. So, whereas it's very easy to make light of certain hachakos, certain halachos, oh, this is so extreme, come on, what's it needed for, who needs it? But ultimately, the ones who lose that are us ourselves, if we're not meticulous with each and every one of the hachakos. And granted, perhaps some of the hachakos might seem a little bit extreme, but ultimately, they are all a geder, a siyag, because if they were not put into place, so all it takes is one person to go a little too far on one occasion, and you're already dealing with a very, very serious isurim. So the numerous hachakos that we're going to discuss, that were being put into place, are all designed to make sure that everyone stays far away from the core isur involved. And again, the more careful we are with the hachakos, the more we appreciate the renewal of the relationship each and every month. Okay, so to begin with, the Shulchan Aruch and Simcha Kuf Tzarihei tells us that when a woman is anida, there is an isser of schok and kalus rosh, an isser of fooling around, schok and kalus rosh. As the Mishnah of us tells us, schok and kalus rosh, margilin es adam la'erva, too much fooling around releases one from his inhibitions, leads to forgetfulness, leads to going a little bit too far. Now, schok and kalas rosh has to be understood properly. There's no iser on playing Scrabble with your wife when she's anida. That's not schok and kalas rosh. That's simply spending time with one another. Yes, it's enjoyable, but that's not kalas rosh. It's not fooling around. Now, if you took a game like Twister, maybe that would be a little more begeder kalas rosh or schok, and leading ones to forget all and any inhibitions. So that might be a little more inappropriate, and therefore usher. But simply playing a board game, Monopoly, Scrabble, and the like, that's not schok and kalas rosh. And along those lines as well, the Rama adds that even devarim, even speech, which is classified, categorized as fooling around type of speech, would also be prohibited when a woman is anida. So there again, the same question comes to the front. What is dibur that is considered kalas rosh? What kind of speech is forbidden when one's wife is anida? So here again, one has to be very honest with oneself. What kind of conversation would lead one to forget oneself and be included in this isser? So certainly types of speech that would ordinarily be reserved only for moments of intimacy should be avoided when a woman is anida, because you want to avoid forgetting oneself and going too far. However, simply expressing one's love for one's wife is obviously certainly not in our culture considered to be schok and kalas rosh. That's something which one does presumably more often and beyond the context of intimacy alone, and that alone would not be considered dibur aser when one's wife is anida. So again, it very often depends on the context and on the person as to what kind of dibur would be considered fooling around, would be considered dibur that would be viewed as going too far when one's wife is anida. But one should always be certainly very, very careful to ensure that during the time that one's wife is anida, precisely because we don't have the ability to convey affection physically, one has to be very, very careful to convey the appreciation, the gratitude through compliments, since all physical affection is prohibited, so the necessity, the need to be complimentary verbally is certainly much more pronounced and more critical to remember. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that certainly yichud, that we all know, is mutter when one's wife is anita, because we assume since a woman is going to be mutaris to her husband shortly in the future, and since she has already in the past been mutaris to him, there is no issue yichud. We're not as concerned about one's ability to control his yetzer hara. Another interesting halacha mentioned in Siman Reish Zayin and Chelek Beis of Mishnah Berurah, there's an issue when it comes to an erva of intentionally smelling the perfume that she's wearing. And a number of the posts can quote that in this regard as well. Same way by an erva, there is an issue to smell her perfume with the intention of enjoying it, so too when one's wife is anita, and the same general prohibitions apply there as well. One should not intentionally smell one's wife's perfume when she's wearing it with the intent of enjoying it, because that might possibly lead to forgetfulness and to iser.
To wear perfume when they're neat. I think some people are knowing that way.
So it could be that, a woman, there's no issur on her to do it.
Okay.
It could be that if she wants to help her husband along and making life easier for him, because he has the issur in smelling her perfume when she's wearing it, so it makes sense. Certainly a get like that is well understood. But there's no issur on a woman to wear perfume when she is an anita. There is a notion in halacha that a woman should not, excessively get all dressed up in a way that might be provocative to her husband. So that obviously, what you're saying now is certainly, can be understood in that perspective as well. Might be part and parcel of that overall, advice to a wife to be a little more restrictive, so to speak, or cautious in terms of what she puts on and how she dresses when she's in Nida, for her husband's sake. Okay. Second sif in Shulchan Aruch tells us, we all know that obviously when one's wife is in need, not only is tashmish hamitzah forbidden, but even physical affection in other forms is forbidden. Hugging and kissing is also usur, obviously. And according to some Rishonim, that is an isur d'oraisa. According to some Rishonim, even hugging and kissing is an isur d'oraisa of lo sikrivu l'galas erva when one's wife is in need. Very serious isur. What Chazal added to that isur of physical forms of affection, Chazal, Shulchan Aruch, Paskins tell us that even physical contact, which is not affectionate in nature, is also forbidden when one's wife is anita. Simply tapping on the shoulder is obviously usur when she is anita. And again, here people could question, why is it usur? I'm just getting her attention. What's the big deal? We're married 10 years. We're used to each other. Come on. The idea being that because there is so much familiarity, even simple physical touch might, lead to something more than that.
Does that include with the utensil?
Yeah, even through a let's say tapping her with something else would also be forbidden. Correct. Okay, so the physical contact, even casual physical contact, is forbidden. Even via some other intermediary, so to speak, would also be forbidden. In addition to that, Isser, which is very clear in Chazal, a number of the Rishonim were noheg, and this is how Shulchan Aruch Paskins as well, an isser of hoshata, which means to pass something from one to another. Lo yoshet miyado liyado shem dover, not to pass from hand to hand anything when she is in Ida. And there the concern is, maybe in the course of passing something from one to another, you come to physical contact as well. Now granted, this is much more of a concern when you're passing a house key from one to another, much less of a worry when you're passing a soda bottle, perhaps, or a bigger item from one to another. But nonetheless, the isser is across the board. Chazal is not going to give us, specific measurements of, any item less than 10 centimeters in length or 5 inches in length, whatever the case might be, is going to be usser, and beyond that is mutter. Chazal just said, Rishonim said you shouldn't pass anything from hand to hand because of this concern that one might come to touch his or her spouse in the process. However, because the Isser of Hoshata is not found in the Gemara, it's only found in some of the Rishonim, and not even all of the Rishonim. So even though it's Paskin the Shulchan Aruch le Isser, like those Rishonim who prohibited it, However, there are instances when poskim are makel. And again, with the understanding that the iser is only because one might come to touch one's wife in the process. So when there is a shas archak, a tzorach, and there is no concern that one will come to touch his wife in the process, poskim are makel in the following examples. Rav Yosef or Moshe Feinstein are makel. If, let's say, you are going on to a bus, coming off a bus, and you have a baby carriage with you, and you can't get it off or on by yourself, and there's no one else to help you besides your spouse. So they're makel. You take one end, she takes the other end. You're not going to bump into each other in the process. Shas etzarach, shas etchak, it's mutter. Or coming home from Shul on Shabbos, you got to climb a flight of stairs in your walk-up apartment, and you can't do it yourself, your wife can't do it herself, there's no one else to give you a hand. There as well, shas etzarach, shas etchak, Rav Moshe and Rav Yosef are makel, that if you are careful to take one end, your wife takes the other end, you're not going to touch each other because there's a major carriage in between you. So precisely because there's no concern for negiah there, and because this Isra of Hoshata is only mentioned in some Rishonim, not all Rishonim, so although Shulchan Aruch paskins it's Aser, but in that scenario, those poskim are willing to be makel that it would be mutter under those circumstances.
Even if somebody else would be there to help you, so you're probably not going to tell them because then it would be obvious.
So if you can, ask them to help you, that's preferred.
They're going to be like, how come your wife isn't doing it?
Okay, well, hopefully the guy right. has a little more seichel than just
right.
that. Right. Presumably he'll realize that. Don't say anything, just help out. Hopefully.
I'm saying, but isn't that a breach of...
It's not. You're right, you're not supposed to verbalize, when your wife is going to the mikvah. Right, you're not supposed to verbalize when your wife is going to the mikvah. However, the fact that people will know that your wife is anita by seeing you observing the hachakos is not in of itself a breach of tznius. Everyone knows that this is what happens. So that's not considered a breach of tznius. The breach of tznius is when you verbally express when your wife is going to the mikvah. That's considered a breach of tznius. Yeah.
What about passing a child, a baby?
Oh, I'll get to that. Hang on.
Is it a stroller, or let's say you have like a big box?
So again, what's the shas tzorach there? I mean, a stroller is more of a shas tzorach, because
you can't leave your kid
on the street.
You went to the store and you bought a table. You have to get the table off the car into the house.
Okay, so the question is, how necessary was it to do today, and to get it in the house today? My tables is less of a pressing issue. It's not going to starve. It's not going to get too cold outside. So there, if you can avoid it, better to avoid it. If, you're moving, and... just made Aliyah and your Zillow movers dumped your stuff in front of your apartment and left, and there's no one else to help because it's late at night. Okay, maybe then, that would be permissible if,
Shas et chak, shas et tzorach, right.
So a table's not always
right.
Shas et chak, shas et tzorach. If it does qualify for that, then one can reconsider. Okay. With regard to passing babies, there is a heter quoted in the Achronim that a baby who is old enough to reach from one parent to the other can be passed from spouse to spouse, only because when the baby reaches out, so it's as if the baby himself or herself is going from one to the other, it's not as much that I'm passing the baby. And also in that case, there's less concern for touching. If I don't have to reach over to take the baby's diving into my hands, it's less concern for negiah. So many poskim are makel, if the baby is able to lunge from one parent to the next, that would be permissible. When the baby is much too young, baby is just a month or two old, and is unable to reach from one parent to the next, then it would be also to take the baby from hand to hand, according to the vast majority of poskim. What's recommended in that case would be to, if you can't put the baby down in the bed momentarily or in the crib momentarily, you're somewhere else and you don't have that available to you, so simply rest the baby on a surface while holding on at the same time, to have your wife grab onto the baby at the same time, and then you leave go, and then she takes the baby. So it's not directly passing, it's simply both holding the baby while the baby's resting on a table, for example. No, because that's from you directly. Put the baby on a...
Even if you're not passing it, it's sitting on your lap and...
Same problem. Rest the baby on a table, on a chair, on a couch, and hold on to one arm. Wife takes the other arm, and then you leave go, and then she takes the baby off the couch. That'd be the best way to do it if you don't have any other option. There's always the third option, which I've told some individuals in the past when I was in Eretz Yisrael at the Kotel once, and I was finished my davening and I was leaving. And young Israeli man calls me over. Boina, boina. Ken, ma tafza. Kacha tatinok bakasha. There's left the baby. Okay, no problem. Toza, goodbye. Okay. So you can always take that approach if you're so inclined. Maybe check with your wife first before you do that. But otherwise, you know, the other recommended approach is to just put the baby on a third surface, on a couch or wherever it may be. Hold on to one arm. Your wife can take the other arm. Then you leave go, and your wife takes the baby. Okay. For the same reason, one should be careful also if you're walking, let's say, walking home from shul on Shabbos, and you have a little toddler in between you. So often, you know, you hold one hand, your wife holds the other hand. Sometimes these kids like to take free rides in the process. That would not be allowed, because swinging a kid when your wife is needed is the same as carrying something together. That would not be allowed. So if you're going to be holding on to a child at the same time as your wife, just make sure that the child's not going to jump up and go for a free lift. That's when he's lunging from one spouse to the other. Here you're both carrying him together. And that's like carrying something together, which is also usur, because of the isur of hoshata. The same way I can't pass something from me to you, it's because that moment that we're passing, there's a concern I might touch my wife's hand because we're holding something together. So holding a baby together while walking is like carrying baby together. That's also the same concern. Baby lunges from one to the next. We're standing still. Baby's just lunging from me to her to me to her. We're not carrying together, just taking and going. But, you know, carrying together would be usur.
If the kid is in between the two of you and does start swinging and you both stop walking, is that a problem? Because you said it's walking while...
That's probably a good point. Yeah, probably should not do that either. Right.
Should not stop walking?
No, I'm saying you probably should not give him a swing while you're standing stationary either.
Not give a swing. If the kid starts swinging while you're walking, is stopping to walk solve it, or that's no difference?
Probably should stop to walk and then one of you should leave go. Well, have him land first. Let go. Right, I'm not sure. Right, I'm not sure if you're stationary and the child is swinging in between you. I'm not sure if that's any better. Because there again, you're holding someone or something together. So best to discourage the child from doing that. And some folks can go so far as to say, don't hold the child together. One hand.
Letting go will discourage them.
I don't know if I'd advise that once the kids are airborne already, but saying, you know, some posts can advise even the chassidim not both holding the hand either hand at the same time for that concern, for that reason. I don't know if you have to go that far, but you do want to avoid holding the baby together when he or she is taking a free ride. Okay. Another common shaila that comes up is accepting the honor of kvater at a bris when one's wife is an ida. In that regard, Avraham Yosef writes that Sfardisha poskim have a minhag to be mekel if there are two pillows in the woman's hand, the baby's on top of the top pillow, and the husband takes the top pillow and the baby out of his wife's hands without taking the bottom pillow. So Avraham writes that Sfardisha poskim are mekel in that case, because you're not taking the bottom pillow, you're taking the top pillow, the baby's on the top pillow, not on the bottom pillow. So there is...
How do you put the baby back?
On the pillow.
Right, I guess...
On the pillow onto another pillow, so...
I guess the same way, presumably. I guess the same way. It's not, you know, it's you're taking pillow off of pillow and putting pillow back onto pillow. The same hatchet that he has going in, he'd have going out. Now his wife's holding a bottom pillow, and you're simply taking and returning a pillow and a baby on top of that pillow, or from on top of that pillow. So there is such a heter out there. Ashkenazi folks generally are not comfortable with that heter. They recommend avoiding it. But you know, there is that psak of Rav Avadja that is in writing. There is such a minhag among certain poskim to mekel. Again, I don't know if the vast majority of Ashkenazi poskim would advise that l'chatchila. Okay, the Rama says further that not only is passing forbidden from one to the other. But in addition, even throwing from one to the other is usur. Some poskim recommend against tennis or ping pong when a wife is needed for this reason. Just like throwing something from one spouse to another is forbidden. Some suggest, I think Rabbi Forst writes this if I'm not mistaken, that tennis ping pong might be questionable. Granted, there the intent is to throw it away from your wife, not toward her. So perhaps one might argue, you know, there are some postmen actually who write that if you throw something in the air, not toward her, and she just, you know, takes it and catches it, that would be okay. So maybe one could argue that here you're hitting the ball away from her, if you're more competitive in kind. So maybe perhaps you could argue that this would be comparable to just throwing something in the air and letting her catch it.
Bouncing first?
I don't think that matters, because it's to her. It's to her. Right.
If you're good, you can't play.
Right, so I wonder, I guess one might argue that, well, since, you know, just like you can throw something in the air, according to some poskim, if she then takes it, since it's not being thrown toward her, so here also you're hitting it away from her, if she then runs in and hits it back, why should that be usur? Okay. Interesting question.
And why can't you throw something?
Right, so that's quoted by the Rambam as a even later extension of the minhag of Rashi of not to pass things directly. It's based on the Maharam Mirotenberg. Right. As I said, this is all begeder, siyag l'siyag. Right, granted there's no direct concern you might touch her in the process of throwing it to her. Nevertheless, Maharam was not excited about throwing things from one to the other. So it could be that's what some postman make if you throw it up in the air, not toward her, because then there's even less of a concern. So I wonder about tennis and ping pong, whether one could argue it's like throwing it away from her, and the fact that she might then catch it or return it wouldn't be of concern. I'm not sure. It's an interesting question. Some poskim, like Rav Feivel Cohen, however, are makel that if you want to pass your wife the car keys and you're at some event somewhere, you can drop it into her purse. Not put it directly into her purse, but almost like throw it into her purse. I guess Rav Feivel Cohen assumes that, like you said, throwing it to begin with is only an extension of the isser of some rishonim to pass it directly. So if you're not throwing it to her directly, it's not from hand to hand, it's just from hand to purse. You know, you just shoot your hoops and lands in her purse, he feels that would be okay.
Would you be able to say the same at a meal, like she would have her holding her plate? Could you put food on the plate if she's holding the plate?
Good question. Serving food is another issue we'll get to. As far as Zrika is concerned, there wouldn't be a problem. Right. But there's another issue involved in serving food. We'll get to that shortly. But you're right. As far as Zrika is concerned, it's not a problem.
Correct. You just drop it if she catches it? I mean,
just drop it if she catches it. I don't think Boston would recommend that. If anything, do the throw up, not throw down.
I said throw your food up.
Well, not food. I'm talking about car keys. Car keys, right. Again, the easiest thing is throw it into the purse, put it down on the table. If none of those options are available, so they're supposed to allow you to throw up, not toward her, and then she'll hopefully catch it.
She's
inconspicuously.
Let's say, to a group of people. She's one of them.
Okay. If you're not throwing it to her, I don't know if it's problematic. You're throwing it to a group. I don't think that's considered zrika to her. I don't think it's worried about that. Okay. Moving into food hachakos. Shulchan Aruch says that when one eats with his wife when she's anita, you require a shinoi, a heker. Something to remind you that she is anita. Obviously, the concern is that, you know, if you're eating a romantic candlelight dinner, you might forget that she's anita and come to dover usur. So for that reason, Shulchan Aruch paskins, if you're eating at a table together with your wife when she is anita, you must have some reminder that she's anita. And the post can compare this halacha to the halacha in Hilchos Basa B'Challah. When eating a meal with somebody and you're eating milchus, he's eating fleishiks, there as well, in order to remind you that you can't share your food, there's a need for a hecker at the table. What is considered a hecker? A hecker would be something which doesn't belong on the table, which you put on the table. So it shouldn't just be like a little house key that you can barely see. But if you, for argument's sake, you take a, what's a classic, take a closed can of corn from the pantry and put it on the table in between you. What's it doing there? You're not eating from it. It's not there to be served from. It's obviously there for a hecker. That's permissible. Okay, something
it has
which
to
is
be something that's not doesn't belong. Or
it could be
that usually you don't use, you only use on that occasion.
Yes, right. It could be something which doesn't belong there, or something which is, well, same thing. Something which doesn't belong there, or what was the other option you mentioned?
No, it's like I know someone in Israel that uses mm-hmm. this certain soul shaker.
Yeah, that's fine. Something which is only there when she is Anita. That's fine.
Okay.
That's what you mentioned.
Yeah.
Right, something which is only on the table when she's Anita is fine. Something which is never supposed to be on the table, you know, is fine. Is also a good hecker. Either one of those would work. Poskim mentioned, for example, Shulchan Aruch says if you have placemats, which you ordinarily don't have, it's the same example. As you ordinarily eat on the tablecloth or on the table, and when she's Anita, you have placemats. So that's a reminder that she's Anita. That would work. Or if ordinarily eat on the tablecloth, and this time when she's Anita and you're eating together, so you fold back the tablecloth and eat on the table itself. That's also a valid hecker. Something different done to remind you that she is Anita.
Does it have to be between you, you said before?
No.
On the table?
Well, right there where you can see it. Right, I don't think it has to be between you. Right there where you can see it. You know, if it's other end of the table, it's not going to help you,
right.
Presumably. But if it's right there where you can see it, I don't think it has to be dafka between you as a machitza. Just should be there where you see it, so it's a hecker. Yes, if you usually use placemats, then using some placemats wouldn't work. Correct.
That's not like a separate table? In terms of like meat and milk wouldn't be like...
I'm sorry?
Like with meat and milk, can you have a separate placemat, like a tray or something? That wouldn't work here as well?
I mean, if for meat and milk, when I'm eating flesh and cheese and milchiks, or whoever else is there is eating milchiks, so there, having two separate placemats would also presumably be a good hecker. And if two different colors, I mean?
Yeah.
One's for milk, one's for leishiks?
Right, I'm thinking here it has to be not the usual placemat.
Right, here the point is it can't be whatever you usually have there. It has to be something different. So either if you don't always use placemats, or if you're always in the tablecloth, have one person eat on the tablecloth, one person eat on the table itself. Something to remind you. Okay. Shulchan Aruch says that it has to be yesh shum shinoi sheyihya shum davar mafsik ben ka'ar shalah l'ka'ar shalah. It should be something in between your plate and her plate, or that you each have your own placemat, for example, which you don't ordinarily have. However, the Shevet Alevi of Vosner writes over there that even though Shulchan Aruch says it should be davar mafsik between your plate and her plate, he says it doesn't have to be mamish be between your plates, even if it's just a little bit over, but it's clearly visible to both, that's also sufficient. So Lashon Shulchan Aruch says davar mafsik, but he says the idea is it should be right there so you can both see it very easily. Okay. Moving on, there is a kula in some poskim that when you're eating with other people present, there's no need for a shinoi or for a hecker there. Certainly when you're eating alone with your wife, or if there's just a young, very young child or baby there, then you need a hecker or a shinoi. If, however, you're eating with others at the table, be it friends, guests, family, or even a child in the family who's old enough, say 5 years and up, Rav Vosner writes, he's aware of what's going on, that would be, according to many poskim, sufficient to eliminate the need for a hecker, because you're already presumably inhibited somewhat because you have other people there watching, so there's no need for, we're not as worried, there's no need for a hecker in that scenario. Okay? Okay. The Ramah then writes.
Public places.
Sorry?
Public places.
Meaning?
Restaurant
again. I assume you're eating with people there, so they're not at your table. Again, if it's a very empty restaurant, you're sitting in some corner somewhere, and the waiter comes by only from time to time, then perhaps you should have a heckler there. But if you're sitting busy, you're in Carlos and Gabby's, and the place is packed, and people right next to you are listening to your conversation anyways. I don't think you need a heckler in that case.
Don't think I'd go Canada.
Yeah.
Why don't we say the same thing with other Hong Kongers?
Meaning? When others are there.
Right.
It's an interesting question. Because the purpose behind this harchaka is that it's a reminder to inhibit you somewhat, to keep you inhibited when you're eating. I guess someone else sitting at the table accomplishes the very same thing. You're saying, well, by that same token, so why can't I say the same thing by passing? And why can't I pass the table plate from hand to hand if others are there as well? Interesting question. Most poskim are not makel on hoshato in the presence of others. Why here is a difference? Good question. Offhand, I'm not sure. Have to look and see why, what the makor for that tilak is over here. It's a good question. Not sure. Okay. There is also an isser when a wife is anita to eat from the same plate. Now, you might think same plate, who eats in the same plate? But poskim understand that to mean that even taking food from a common plate directly from plate to mouth would be problematic. Meaning, if there's a bowl of chips on the table, so normally we're accustomed to just taking from the plate, from the bowl, putting it into our mouths directly. When one's wife is anita, because you're not supposed to be eating from the same plate, you should not just take some pretzels out of the bowl and start eating straight from the bowl. You should take from the bowl and put on your plate first, and then eat from there.
In public places, again, I'm going back to the Carlos and Gabby's example. If you have like nachos on the table, it's like in the center bowl.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the heter of others there is with regard to not having a reminder on the table. But the issue of eating from one car or from one plate, I think would still be in effect. So just take it and put it on your plate first, then eat off the beer plate instead of off the common plate in the middle. Okay, our mother tells us one last ha'ar on that halacha. However, a number of poskim write that, let's say you have like a butter dish in the middle of the table, and you're buttering your roll with it. So they don't think that you have to take the butter out of the butter dish, put it on your plate first, and then take it from your plate, put it on your roll. There they let take it off the butter dish in the middle, put it directly on the roll, and then eat the roll. They don't view that as eating from the same plate. It's just when you have like a bowl of chips or pretzels on the table, or fruit platter on the table, don't take directly from the fruit platter to your mouth, put it on your plate first, and then eat from your plate.
When you're saying put it on your plate, does it mean you have to actually make a portion off your plate and take it? Or take the fork, go like this, and go like that?
What are the two options?
Okay. You have to actually put it on, make it as if you're making a portion on your plate and then take from it? Or can I go ahead, take my fork, put it into the main dish, stick it on my plate and go like that?
Yeah. Put it down on your plate and then take off your plate.
Even though I'm not actually placing it on my plate, I put it down, I'm still holding the fork.
No, leave go of the fork. Leave go of the fork. Touching the plate, I'm not sure is going to help. I think put it down first. It might just be easier just to give yourself a serving and then just eat off of your plate. I think that's the preferred method. Our mother tells us that there is an isser as well for a husband to eat his wife's leftover food. The same way there is an isser for a husband to drink his wife's leftover drink. Okay, what this means is that your wife eats, doesn't finish her meal, you can't finish her leftovers.
Vice versa is fine.
Vice versa is fine. Correct. Right. Vice versa is fine. Poskim writes that this does not mean if your wife's cooking for Shabbos and decides to sample the soup to make sure that it tastes good, that now the whole pot of soup and your Shabbos soup for the next 3 weeks is off bounds. No, that's not what it means. It means when she's sitting down with you and eating, because eating someone's leftovers, unless you're, you know, a guy in college, is usually reserved for, you know, people have more of an intimate relationship. So therefore, you don't want to eat your wife's leftovers when she isn't eating, because that's an indication of intimacy, of over-familiarity.
But it is okay for a wife, if there are leftovers on the husband's plate.
Yes, because it's so uncommon. Right, that is allowed. Right, that is allowed. Other way around, it's okay. A wife can have her husband's leftovers, but a husband can't have his wife's leftovers.
Is it helping out for another plate?
Yes, we'll get that right now. Yes, 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 yes. Now, halacha is that when in some situations, let's start this way. The halacha is as follows. With regard to both drinking your wife's leftovers or eating your wife's leftovers, if your wife is not in the room, it's mutter. Because again, it's only also because it's an indication of intimacy, of familiarity. If she's not there, it kind of loses its effect somewhat. So if she's not in the room, you can drink her leftovers, eat her leftovers.
Straight from her glass, straight from her plate?
Yes, correct. Correct. That's mutter. That's number one. If she's out of the room, you can drink it, you can eat it, straight from her cup, straight from her plate, not a problem. Heta number two is that if you did not know it was her leftovers, you have a habit of just, you know, looking into the fridge and taking whatever's there. Now granted, if it's only...
Well, it's really going to make a difference.
If she's not there, you mean. Even if she's in the room. If she
took her food and put it in the fridge, you can't go take it at that point. It's not, you're not sitting and eating over there.
Okay, I would think that it's still usher if she's in the room there. If she's in the room there and still on her plate, I think it'd still be usher. The hector is if you don't know it's her leftovers. As you walk into the kitchen and you had some guests over for dinner and everyone's finished eating and there's some plates on the table still there and you start to start picking some leftovers, you're a little hungry. So if you don't know which plate is hers, she doesn't have to tell you. Stop. She doesn't have to tell you. Once again, this is all because there's some familiarity, some intimacy there. But if you don't know which plate is hers, there's nothing b'derechiba about your eating those leftovers. So if you don't know it's her leftovers, she doesn't have to tell you. If she's not in the room, even if you know it's her leftovers, you can eat it, you can drink it. When it comes to also food and drink, if someone else nibbles on her leftovers first, that also kind of like zaps all... depends what age. I think if it's a 2-year-old, no. But if it's... I think if somebody who's perhaps a little older... Then yes.
And you could actively give it to the child to solve the problem.
Yeah. Meaning, if someone else is partaking of it, then that destroys the exclusivity of the relationship there. Obviously, if my wife, eats half her plate, and my mother-in-law then takes a bite of her food, and I come in right afterwards, not the same. So,
why is the fridge not considered like a separation? Not considered a whole.
Why is what?
A fridge, putting it in the fridge, closing the door, not considered.
Because it's still her food, only her food.
Not the room anymore. You have a nice pizza, most fridges.
I'm not sure if that makes a difference, because the fact that there's.
Why did they count that she left the room?
Leaving of the room is effective because she doesn't see you eating her leftovers, so that connection isn't there. If she sees, even if she put it in the fridge, in the meantime, I'm not sure if that's going to make a difference. I don't think that would help. Okay.
You took a child over 5, you said?
Mm-hmm. So by restricting the inhibition, by negating the need for a hecker on the table, post can speak of 5 and up. By this hetero of having someone else eat in between, I didn't see any specific age range given. I assume at least the same,
right.
the same halakha would apply. That has to be someone who is old enough that there's no longer any intimacy between you and your wife in the course of eating these leftovers.
Food stop becoming yours and becomes hers.
I'm sorry?
When does food stop becoming yours and it now classified as her food?
What do you mean?
If you have a plate of food, and
right,
she's allowed to eat from yours. If you're
right, correct.
Right. So is that still considered your plate, or now she's eating from it?
No, if you're not finished eating yet, then she can't take your food because then it's eating from the same plate. Well, the leftovers means you're done eating.
Okay.
Right, you're done eating. So if you're done eating, she can take your leftovers and finish it. If you're eating and she's going to take a taste and give it back to you, that's eating at the same plate. That wouldn't be allowed. Or that would be you eating her leftovers. You know, it would be both. It's only when you're done eating, she can take the rest and finish it herself. But when she's done eating, you can't take her leftovers unless she's out of the room, someone else takes a bite in between, or you don't know it's hers. I'm sorry? Hold on. Let's get to that right now. So far I've mentioned the heterim of if your wife's not in the room, if you don't know it's her leftovers, or if someone else takes a bite in between. The last heter with regard to drinking leftovers is the following. Your wife drinks, leaves over something in her cup. You're allowed to pour it into another cup and then drink it from there. Now, by drinking, that's explicit that it's mutter. You're allowed to pour her leftover drink into another cup and drink it from there. By food, that halacha that heter does not apply across the board. And the reason given is because liquid takes the shape of, you know, whatever cup it's in. So we view it as, you know, different cup, different, just different. It's different. A solid food, which, you know, is going to retain its shape wherever it is, a bagel, doesn't really need a plate. So the fact that she had it on a plate because you don't want it to touch your counter, it's not going to make a difference if you put it on your plate now and then you want to eat it. That's not going to be enough of a heter. Even a steak or a piece of chicken, solid piece of food, doesn't really need a plate, you know, strictly speaking. So the fact that you take it from her plate, put it into your plate, is not going to make a difference. So that heter of, oh, I switched plates, is not going to work for solid pieces of food. For more liquidy food, which needs a utensil to contain it, oatmeal, maybe even rice, or, you know, foods like that, there the same heter would be enforced. That if you transfer it from her plate to your plate after she's finished eating, you'd be allowed to eat those leftovers. Okay, so this last heter is, if you transfer the drink from cup to cup, it's mutter to drink. With regard to food, though, that heter would only apply to food that needs a utensil. More of the, I guess you could say, think of examples like that. Food that you can't just, you know, it's not a solid piece. Maybe coleslaw, you could say, a similar example. You know, needs a utensil to contain it in. So then the heter would apply that if you take it from her plate, put it into your plate, then you can eat it. That would be okay. Yeah.
Is there a problem with you eating her leftovers and there are teeth marks? Let's say it's a piece of meat.
So again, a piece of meat. She's out of the room. She's out of the room.
And I have a piece of steak.
Still mutter. Still mutter. Because the fact that you know that it's hers and you see her teeth marks then is not going to make a difference if she's not there to also be part of that connection, so to speak. Okay, so our heterim for eating leftovers, drinking leftovers are, she's out of the room, go right ahead. If you don't know it's hers, well, then you wouldn't even ask the child to begin with, but go right ahead. She doesn't have to tell you. That's how it's relevant. If someone else took a bite or drink in between, go right ahead. I don't know if we'd apply that heter to, let's say, a little baby, because I'm not sure if that's going to ruin the intimacy, so to speak. I didn't see Poston discuss that explicitly, but as Mustaber, I think that, you know, a little baby probably wouldn't be enough of a, you know, disturbance, so to speak, to the intimate relationship or connection there. And finally, the heter that if the drink is transferred to another cup, you can drink it. When it comes to solid foods, however, only if the solid food needs a utensil to contain it, that heter of transferring it would apply, otherwise not. Okay, so this very relevant going out to eat at a restaurant. Each order your entrees. You know, if your wife doesn't finish her grilled chicken, you cannot eat it if she's still in the restaurant with you, which hopefully she is. if you know it's her chicken, which you better. And
forgetting it to go to the bathroom doesn't count.
Oh, that would count. That would count. Yes. Yes.
Once she comes back, continue eating it.
Yes. 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 You can.
Once she left
yes.
the room, you can continue eating even if she comes back.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What if you go to a restaurant?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If you're in a restaurant and you get your main dish,
and you split it in half in the beginning, and she's only going to eat this half, and the other half is meant for you after she finishes her half.
Let's say she has two pieces of grilled chicken.
Or even one that's cut in half.
Cut in half, right.
Before she starts eating from it, cut in half. And stays on her plate the while she's eating her half. Can you then either take that onto your plate or switch the plates and eat it from that plate after she finishes her part?
So let's take an easier shot at first. Two pieces, you know, the entree is two pieces of grilled chicken.
Right.
She eats only one, doesn't touch the other one.
Right.
So that piece of chicken is not her leftovers. The only issue would be eating out of the same plate. If you put it into your plate,
you can't take
it would be okay. Yes, that would be fine. If it's the same piece of chicken...
Cut before she starts touching it.
Arguably one... Good question. Right. So if it's one piece of chicken, which you cut into two pieces before she starts eating, and she doesn't touch the other half, so arguably you could say that there also, it's not shiur ma'achala, she never touched it, it's mutzah for you to eat it. There are some poskim who raise the concern that if this is a small, small piece, which is always, you know, assumed to belong to one person, even initially, you know, cutting in half and giving you a piece might be viewed as somewhat of a intimate connection.
You ordered two mates.
I'm sorry?
You ordered two mates and you're splitting
one. That's fine. Even in this case of let's say, cutting one piece of chicken in half before she begins, strictly speaking, you can't say it's shir ma'achal. I think, strictly speaking, it's mutter. Some posts can hesitate because still maybe it's an indication of intimacy, you know, Would a woman do this to anybody sitting at her table? Probably not. But strictly speaking, I think it's mutter, because it's not shir ma'achala.
And splitting it and taking it off her plate before she starts, that...
For sure, that's also fine. Yeah, that's also fine. Before she starts. Even while she's eating, if you take it off her plate, put it into your plate, she never touched that piece of meat, that would also be okay. Because she didn't touch it, it's not her leftovers. If you're putting it in your plate first, not eating it at the same plate, that would be okay. If you order two mains and you split them initially, also fine. Okay. Moving ahead. Shulchan Aruch tells us, and other Achronim add, there's an issue of a husband to lie in his wife's bed, whether she is present in the room or not. When she is an Ida, one cannot lie in his wife's bed. One cannot sit on his wife's bed, certainly not when she's in the room. According to some poskim, even when she's not in the room, you shouldn't sit on her bed either. So, bottom line, that means that when your wife's an Ida, whether she's in the room or not, don't lie in her bed, don't sit on her bed. Sitting on her bed. Sitting on her bed.
I need a time issue. I can't sit down.
Right.
I need to get to the corner. I don't want to get to sitting to reach over there. You can't sit down.
Okay, so if she's not in the room, and you're sitting on the bed, there are posts who would be makel.
You're not sitting and say, oh, this is my wife's bed. I'm sitting on it. You're sitting because it's a...
True. The idea behind this halacha is that a bed is you know, personal domain. You know, guests usually don't walk into your bedroom and sit down on your bed or on your wife's bed just to tie their shoes. Right? We view that as a personal area. We don't, generally speaking, unless you're davening Marvin's bedroom as part of it, never say so. Okay, but generally speaking, it's personal domain. You don't go there. So, yes, if there's a tzorech, you have to get something, you can't reach it, and your wife's not in the room, to sit on her bed momentarily to get something, you know, posting to be mekel. Some would be machmer, some would be mekel. But as a general rule, we try to avoid it because... You know, you usually can avoid it. Usually, it's not desperate. Usually, sit in your bed. It's not a big deal. So, you know, you don't have to be dafka sit in her bed if you have to get to tie your shoe.
Can you take something off of her bed?
That's fine. That's totally fine. Yeah, yeah. Totally
is this
fine.
Just by a bed or if there's like a certain chair in the living room? That's
just by a bed. Because bed is more personal. More personal. Right. Dining room chair, no problem at all. Just a bed.
Even though she has like a Malcolm Kabbalah, so to speak?
No problem at all. Just a bed. Just a bed. The bed is more personal, more intimate. That's where the issur applies. She, however, is allowed to sit on your bed even when she is in your presence. She can sit on your bed. I think that's mine. Okay. However, lying on her husband's bed, she cannot do in your presence. She cannot do in your presence.
She can sit on your bed in your presence?
She can sit on your bed in your presence, yeah. But lying on your bed, she cannot do in your presence. She can only do when you're not there. Another halacha mentioned in Ramah here is that one's not allowed to sit with his wife when she's needed on a swing together, where one person's movement affects the other.
Seesaw,
swing, you have that, you know, the rocking thing on your deck, if you have a deck in the back, you know, and you have that rocking backyard apparatus, you can't sit on that together, unless, of course, there's someone sitting in between you. There again, the idea is very simple. Sitting together and rocking with each other is kind of romantic. If your mother-in-law is sitting in between you and your wife, it definitely is not. So, there again, same, a very posh logic to that.
Even if there are two separate cushions, right?
Well, if it's one swing, even separate cushions is not going to help. On a couch, where the couch itself is not movable, the cushions are what move,
right,
then sitting on one big cushion might be an issue. Two different cushions would be okay.
And a kid between a rocking chair or whatever, rocking...
I mean, if a child's between you.
Yeah.
So again, you know, I didn't see Poskim discuss age ranges for kids sitting between you. They just say if someone's sitting between you, then it's mutter. Again, if it was just a little baby, I don't know if they'd be so quick to be mater. If it's an older child, then it has a word apply.
A bench that doesn't move, but it's one solid piece.
Totally fine. Right, park bench.
Right next to each other.
A park bench. So a park bench, you can sit.
Yeah,
you can sit down together on a park bench. You have to be careful not to touch each other, and ideally, even your clothing should not touch her clothing. But that's mutter, that you can do. Same Ramah tells us that, you know, you should not go, let's say, on a small boat together, alone, paddle boating or canoeing, where again, one person's movement affects the other, that also would be included in this Isser. Okay.
Backseat of a car?
I'm sorry? So backseat of a car, they're already, it's not your movement affecting her, generally speaking, it's the car bouncing up and down, it's not you, it's not her. You have to be careful not to touch each other, so put a purse between you and her, or someone in between, a kid in between you and her, that would be mutter. There's machlokas achronim with regard to kol isha, hearing your wife singing when she's in Ida. Reb Moshe is machmer, Rav Yosef is mekel. So certainly one should not encourage his wife to sing, and hopefully one's wife would also, you know, try not to sing her husband's presence. But again, if let's say a woman is singing to put a baby to sleep, or you walk into the house and your wife is singing, you have to yell at her to stop, because there's what to be mekel, what to rely upon. Rav Avadja is mekel, there are chum that are mekel. L'chatchila, certainly Rav Moshe says one should try to be machmir, but don't be machmir at your wife's expense. If she, you know, if you walk into the house and she's singing, you don't have a chiv to start yelling, you know, sha sha sha. You don't want to listen, so don't listen. But again, don't encourage it, obviously. And I guess one's wife should... I'm sorry? Same halach would apply. Meaning, according to Moshe, one should be machmir. If Vajra holds, one can be mekel. So if, let's say, you know, you're with your wife's family and everyone's singing, your wife's singing as well, she only has what to be samech on. If you're home alone, if your wife really, you know, enjoys singing Shabbos Miras, then it's part of Onok Shabbos, she should be very upset without it. So again, you know, yesh al malismoch. If it's not, you know, so critical to her and so important for her to be singing Shabbos Miras, so then obviously Rav Moshe writes Ro'al Lahachmir. So you know, you can't say that somebody is violating an Isser if his wife is singing when she's in Ida, but l'chatchila, when possible, don't, you know, ideally encourage it necessarily, right? Okay. It is usher to gaze, to be mistakel, at a part of the wife's body that is ordinarily covered. And here again, it's one of those areas of hachakos where the more you put into it, the more you get out of it, so to speak. You know, no one's going to know how makpid you are, but obviously, the more meticulous one is in observing this halacha, so then the benefits are clear. You know, one is able to appreciate the relationship all the more after one's wife becomes tahora. What this means is that when one's wife is changing in the bedroom, so simply don't look. You don't have to change in different rooms, but don't focus in that direction. Poskim discuss, you know, one's a woman's hair when she's an Ida, mad woman's hair when she's an Ida. So here, it depends on what woman is generally accustomed to do in the house. If generally in the house, she is not that makbir with her hair uncovered, so then there is reason to say that, well, that's not in front of her husband, was ordinarily considered makam mechusa. If a woman is generally zahir to cover her hair around the house, so certainly she should be cautious to try as best as she can to cover her hair when she's an Ida, or more accurately, the husband should be cautious not to stare at his wife's uncovered hair when she's an Ida. Correct. It's mistakim, it's to gaze, not just to catch a glance. You know, the glance is not the isser. It's to focus on. Correct. So, right, your wife doesn't have a chiyuv to wear her sheitel to bed when she goes to sleep at night. You shouldn't just stare at her if she's not. If ordinarily she covers her hair around the house. That would be the guidelines. Okay. More with regard to food hachakos, which we didn't touch upon just yet. Shulchan Aruch speaks about there being an isser of a wife when she's an Ida pouring a drink for her husband or serving either the drink or food to her husband. What this means is, halacha l'maisa, that one should not pour a drink for their spouse when she is an Ida, the exception being water. Water is not viewed to be a chash of a drink, and one is allowed to pour water for one's wife.
Both ways, husband.
Yep. Right.
Seltzer.
Seltzer and water, the same thing. But other than seltzer and water, one should not pour a drink for one's wife, one's spouse. One should not serve food by placing it directly in front of one's spouse when a wife is an Ida. However, if a shinoi is employed, it is permissible. Shinoi means you're a righty, serve it with your left hand. So you can put the plate down in front of your spouse or pour the drink for your spouse with your left hand, not with your right. And another heter is when serving, if you don't put it directly in front of them, you put it a little beyond their place setting, they have to then bring it towards them, that would also be permissible.
Why isn't drinks the same thing with dinner habdala, whatever is considered ma'amdina, the question of a thing?
No, there's a special thing by koshal bracha. Is that what you're asking about?
Right. I mean, the same thing with drinking habdala, you can't use it on anything. The question of drink, go ahead and use it. The question is for where.
That's what you're saying. Okay, that's an issue with regard to what qualifies for a koshal bracha. Here, some Rishonim limit the Isser to only wine. So that's more along the lines what you're saying. There are some Rishonim that limit this halacha only to wine. The general minhag, again, based on other Achronim, is to be machmir that it applies to all drinks other than water or seltzer. I think it's because, back in the day, wine was the chash of a drink of choice. Today, not drunk as frequently, as consistently as it was in those days. So nowadays, even juice, milk, we include in this Isser, that you don't pour it without a shinoi, using your weaker hand, and you don't serve a drink or food without a shinoi, either using your weaker hand or by putting it, just beyond their place setting and having them reach out and take it closer to them.
Could you just explain the reason for this halakha in particular? Because it's endearing if someone gives someone, puts down a plate of food in front of them?
So I think preparing one's drink was considered to be an act of endearment. You're just serving the food. You're saying that's just a...
Yeah, it's like you get supper every night.
Right. Maybe we should view it as an act of endearment. Maybe we don't. Right. That's the point. Right. Maybe if we were making this achaka, we would come to appreciate it a little more than when she does serve us our dinner. We'll appreciate it as an act of endearment, which is probably not a bad thing. There are some Rishonim that limit this halacha only to wine, not to food. So,
I thought you said...
No, I did. There are some Rishonim that limit it only to wine. Halacha l'maisa, though, we extend it to other drinks, aside from water and seltzer, and to food as well.
Uh-huh.
So you're asking, according to the halacha ma'aseh, bottom line,
yeah,
what's the idea behind it?
You say a regular supper.
Right.
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 She's serving everybody at the table.
It's specifically serving in front of you, not like plating.
It's I'm sorry, not meaning
not
what?
Plating.
Meaning?
No, she could put it on the table, right?
Either one. It's meaning
she shouldn't
put your food on your plate without a shino, using her weaker hand, for example. Or she shouldn't take your plate stacked with food from the kitchen and then put it in front of you without a shinoi.
If you're not at the table, let's say she brings
it. If you're not there, it's okay. If you're not there, it's okay. Right. If you're not there, it's okay. To put it down there.
And if she's plating it in the kitchen for the entire thing, she has to plate it with her left hand?
No, the left hand is when you're serving it, putting it down. Right. If she's putting all the food on the plate in the kitchen, she can put your food on your plate in the kitchen. And just when she brings it to you, put it down with her left hand. That's okay. And if you're not at the table, then she can put it down however she wants at your seat.
Even if there are people there.
Right, right.
We kept saying
that the only exception we had for other people being there was with regard to requiring a hecker on the table between you and her when you're eating together. Otherwise, we generally require hachakos even when other people are present.
That's only for a wife serving a husband?
Both ways. Okay?
Yeah, a husband serving a wife, that is...
that's endearment.
I guess that's the problem, right? That's the problem. We're trying to change that with these hachakos here, that husbands should appreciate the act of endearment of serving supper.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense. It's a very good hara. I think that's probably the point.
This last one you said is the Shulchan Aruch Ramah.
So yeah, I'll read it to you. The Shulchan Aruch writes that a woman is allowed to do for her husband what she would ordinarily do, let's say in terms of preparing food, for example, except for pouring a cup, which she's not allowed to do in his presence, and placing it before him on the table, which she can't do, unless there's a hecker involved, for example, putting it with her left hand, or putting it a little beyond his place setting, which then he has to reach and take it. Okay, so there's two things. It's pouring his drink where he can see it in front of him. That's usser, unless done with a left hand. If he's not in the room, it's okay to do it normally. And putting his food on his plate, or putting his plate full of food in front of him when he's there, is also problematic unless done with the left hand, or unless put just a little beyond his place setting, he has to pull towards him. Okay, those are the two issues.
The way I described
just now is based on the conclusion of the late Achron, the Shach, Nebach, and contemporary Poskim, who debate the fine details of the halacha, but that's the bottom line basic conclusion.
Would help if the spouse isn't looking at you?
Yeah. That doesn't help. Only if they're not in the room. Okay. Shulchan Aruch then says that it is forbidden for a wife to make up her husband's bed for him when she is in Ida. And this doesn't mean she can't make the beds in the morning if, God forbid, you run out without making your own bed. What it means is that if she's preparing your bed for you in the evening, rolling back the covers, if anybody ever does that, that's more of an intimate act. That would not be allowed. Making the beds, which is more just, nitty-gritty housework, is not a problem. It's only like something...
Turn down service?
Turn down the bed.
Right. Right.
What if the husband wants to make the wife's bed?
So again, if it's making the bed, it's okay. If it's preparing it for her to go to sleep, it's more of a romantic, intimate kind of gesture. Touching the bed is okay. That's not a problem. Sitting on it, you can't. Lying on it, you can't. Making a bed for her, you certainly can. But preparing it for her to go to sleep is more of an intimate gesture that you can't do. Derech Hiba. Okay. Another interesting halacha in Sefiyah Beis and Shulchan Aruch, Simuk Kutzad Hei, is that it's also viewed as a sign of intimacy if a wife prepares bathing water or washing water for her husband. Now, back in the day, this is much more of an issue. You had to literally heat water and fill up a large metal pot for you to jump into. It wasn't so simple. So that was obviously viewed as more of an intimate kind of thing. It's more of a personal thing. Not allowed for a wife to prepare bathing water for her husband. or even washing water for that matter.
Turn the tap water on.
Right. So today it's relevant turning the tap water on. Turning the faucet on in the bath would not be allowed. Turning the shower on just to heat up for you would not be allowed. And even, if your hands are dirty, turning on the sink for you would also be included in this iser. So that's already an extension of the bathing halacha, but it is. It's considered, washing water. Preparing the washing water by turning on the sink, that you shouldn't do. Some poskim are makel when it comes to netilas mitzvah, netilas adayim, mayim achronim, bringing mayim achronim to the table, that would be allowed according to Rav Vosner, because that's, it's not darachi, but that's just netilas adayim for mitzvah purposes.
Why is darachi? My hands are filthy. If it's right. Not darachi, you use it for anybody, your hands are dirty.
So again, I guess because everyone recognizes that preparing bath water for somebody is kind of intimate, right?
Right.
So where do you draw the line? I'm only washing half my body today.
No, you have grease in your hand, you have to go touch everything. No. Any time that you're walking around.
Alright, you're saying you don't touch the faucet because your hands are too filthy.
Right.
So why can't you turn the faucet for you in that case?
This is something to anybody. You see somebody who went to Boston Gabby's afterward and had their fingers. You want to wash their head. Somebody goes ahead and turns the faucet for them.
Right. That's a good question. I think that that's simply just like one of those low plugs, meaning. Because generally, preparing, washing, or bathing water for somebody is an intimate act.
Saying for washing for a mitzvah, then it's for a mitzvah, you're differentiating differentiating washing.
I think there's a very clear differentiation. When it comes to my hands are dirty because I ate Carlos and Gabby's food, or my hands are dirty because I'm very sweaty, or because I'm older because I'm very sweaty, they're already, it's more or less the same problem. So I think that's what, when it comes to washing water, post can say she should not turn on the water for you, hetter being the tilas yadayim lemitzvah. Even then, some posts can question that. But Rav Vosner feels that you can be makel on mayim achorim, tilas yadayim, mayim shonim, etc.
You said tilas for mitzvah, so you're running a bath for her to go to the mikvah.
For her to go to the mikvah, kafifa. I don't think that would work, because that stuff is not that's preparation for the mitzvah. He certainly mentioned that. I don't think that would be included in the heter.
So it's like washing hands.
Question.
Like,
what?
It should be like this that I am my hands
from that. Washing hands, right. Okay. Finally, and this is come to the conclusion, more or less, the last Se'ifim and Shulchan Aruch speak of the following. When one spouse is ill and needs the assistance of the other spouse, what happens then? So, in Halacha and Shulchan Aruch, we're more lenient when the husband is ill, since we assume that, in general, the initiation of intimacy comes from the husband very often. So when the husband is ill, we're more lenient with regard to his halachas. And for that reason, Shulchan Aruch paskins that when a husband is ill and needs his wife, meaning if you could just as easily ask a kid in the house to assist you, then certainly do that. But if there is no one available, and your wife is the only one available, and you need assistance, and you're ill, we would allow her to pass hand to hand. We would allow her to prepare, serve you directly, to prepare the water for you. Even if it is necessary to physically assist you, but at least in that case, we would recommend through some sort of intermediate material, so to speak, if possible, if you need help getting out of the bed, so she can grab your sleeve instead of your arm, that would be recommended. Or at the very least, wearing gloves would be recommended. If, again, she needs to assist you. So somebody, has a cast on and needs assistance walking, getting out of bed, so and she has to hoist you out of bed. So she would be allowed to do that. If she can do it by grabbing your sleeve, that's better. If not, through the sleeve or wearing gloves would be the way to do it. Wearing gloves and then through the sleeve, presumably, would be the best way to do it. The reverse way, when a wife is sick, so they were a little more hesitant because still more concerned about the husband initiating an act of intimacy, derachiva. So when the wife is sick, halacha very, very firmly recommends finding someone else to help. If you have kids in the house, definitely have them help. If you can even have, a mother or mother-in-law come by to help out, definitely recommended. Or a babysitter, a maid, a cleaning lady, somebody who's there can help out. That is certainly recommended and preferred. Because we want to avoid the husband direct physical contact with the wife when she's in need of, if he is well and she is ill. If all else fails, there is no other option. There is nobody else available, and she needs your assistance. Sarah Ma says, if there's no one else to assist her, then it is mutter for him as well if she very, very badly needs his assistance. Sorry?
In that situation, could she use a guy to go ahead and help her?
I mean, another guy.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Is it better to have another guy as opposed to having her husband? Probably not. Interesting question. Right, and if there's no other female around to help her, then her husband can help her. Right.
Even though by another guy, Nagia is not there, Cleva's really not much of a
concern. It's a good question. But here again, you're not doing Nagia Bidea Cleva either. But you're saying, generally, about other people, good question. That's a good question. Right. That's a good question. Right. I didn't see it discussed, explicitly in the postgame, so I don't want to tell you offhand without looking into it further. That's an interesting question. Look into that a little further. But that's the general basic guideline. Ramash simply says, if ain lo mishe shem shem, no one's to help her, then mutter b'kol, then he is allowed to, im tzrich harv lekach, if she needs him very, very much. Okay, so that's the basic guideline. Interesting question. I'll try to look into that a little further. But
the word you said doesn't say if there was another girl to help her.
Correct. Right. It's a good shayla. Try to look into that a little further. I didn't see it discussed offhand. Track it down. Okay. Any other questions? Wrap it up. Good. Okay. Thank you all. Next Sunday, Hashem.